research that resonates.
Schweitzer has not been wrong on any of his years and years of reporting on the Bidens.
Investigations that matter.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
I don't know. Probably not. But that's, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of things that would have happened in my life that that if my last name wasn't Biden.
The only entities, the only people that would report on this, and Peter Schweitzer, who deserves a Medal of Freedom, in my view.
This is The Drill Down with Peter Schweitzer.
Hi, this is Peter Schweitzer, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we relentlessly expose cronyism, corruption, and the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. The co-host of this program, Eric Eggers. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm well, Peter, and I'm excited because, you know, we've been doing this podcast for several years now. Your book's been out for several weeks, and we've seen your books impact media cycles before. But I think this book, the reaction seems to be a little bit different in a better way.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And one of the reasons I think is it's actually starting to grip the imagination of people, because it's not just far off corruption in DC that has no effect. This is corruption that actually means life or death as far as certain people are concerned. So one of the areas that this corruption has real consequences on the issue of fentanyl. This is something that has plagued our country now for close to a decade, if not longer. And yet there's so much inaction by our federal government. We believe it's related to corruption. And we're fortunate to have a great guest today who has been fighting this for a very long time. Derek Maltz, he spent 28 years at the Drug Enforcement Administration. He was the special agent in charge of special operations at the Department of Justice. He also was the chief of the New York Drug Enforcement Task Force. Derek, great for you joining us. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, Derek, we spoke earlier and you reached out to Peter because you'd seen the reaction from the book. You've seen the fact that, I think, as we lay out in the Blood Money book, China is waging a war against the United States. And I guess, like, talk about how the reporting in this book fits into your professional context and stuff that you've been seeing, fighting, and I think thinking and saying for the last decade.
Well, first of all, I just want to say when I received this from Peter, I was so excited to see like somebody put the entire picture together, like cognitive warfare. That's what we're dealing with. So in my world, when I was in charge of the DEA Special Operations Division around 2008, 2009, we started seeing the initiation of a chemical attack on our country from synthetic drugs, specifically synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic cathinones, known as bath salts, K2, and spice. We really didn't know what it was. We had some very significant operations, Project Synergy, Operation Logjam, and we actually exposed how these chemicals were being produced in laboratories in China and sent to America regarding, you know, via websites, and we started seeing Americans getting poisoned. We started seeing some crazy reactions on the streets, things I've never seen. Poison control centers were getting calls, emergency room admissions. We didn't know what was going on. And then a few years later, we saw the shift to fentanyl being sold on the same kind of websites from these Chinese labs. And we started seeing Americans that were dying specifically at the time around 2012 in New England area and South Florida. And again, we didn't know, we weren't prepared. It was illicit fentanyl coming out of the labs in China. Of course, they were smart. And over the years, they shifted and started sending not just the pure fentanyl to Mexico, but they were sending mass amounts of precursor chemicals to Mexico so the cartels can make their own, you know, poison. But here's a really important factor. And that is around 2015, we started seeing for the first time massive money laundering where the Chinese criminals were picking up millions of dollars in America from these Mexican cartels operatives that needed their money moved back to Mexico and other parts of the world. So they started this under the Biden and Obama administration, okay? And that stuff, because we briefed Eric Holder in 2014 on Operation Deadly Merchant, because we saw the perfect storm of death and destruction from Chinese working with the cartels and the Dominican street distributors. So everybody thought it was heroin overdoses. No, it was fentanyl. And then that's just, you know, kept rising over the years. But of course, the current government is not talking about it because of stuff that was identified perfectly in Peter's book. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Derek. I mean, you were fighting this from the beginning. Give us a sense of the reaction you were getting or not getting from government officials. You talked about briefing DOJ officials. What was their reaction? When you talked about this China connection here, how did they react? How did they respond, if at all?
Honestly, not too much response. It was new to everybody at the time. And, you know, over time, they did, like, for example, 2017, we had a major indictment on Chinese, two Chinese out of the District of North Dakota and also the District of Mississippi. So assistant U.S. attorney stepped up, did the indictments. But it's not like we were going to arrest these guys in China, but at least the agents and the local United States attorneys did the right thing and got the indictments. And we've prosecuted over time some of them. But the problem is I had to go with the families a few years ago in front of the Chinese embassy in D.C. because the families that had lost their kids from poisonous fentanyl, they were disgusted because no one in the government was talking about this new trend. Isn't it the job of the United States government to protect the citizens? So if we had poisonous chemicals coming in from China and or Mexico, shouldn't they have been warning America? I mean, at least Donald Trump and his administration, they put a pressure on the Chinese and they started, you know, reducing the amount of direct sales to Americans on the websites. But it just got worse when that border was opened, because now you're given the ability for the cartels to operate with impunity and kill Americans at historic levels. And the Chinese, they sit back strategically and they love it because they're carrying out their unrestricted warfare and their fingerprints are not directly on the fentanyl sales in America. However, Peter, what's going on now, which I know you guys are aware of, and Eric, is that it's now beyond the fentanyl. The nitazenes, etonitazene, isonitazene, metonitazene, protonitazene, those are 20 times more powerful chemicals coming out of Chinese labs being sold for limited amount of money. Like, look at xylazine, the horse tranquilizer, causing necrosis, causing people to rot from inside out in the streets of America. That's coming also from the Chinese labs. And that's in every state now. The DEA just did a recent analysis where they're seeing more and more xylazine, the horse tranquilizer, in the fentanyl. So, yes, it's a chemical weapon attack, and shame on the government for not stepping up.
So just take the people that are listening or watching this podcast into that room, because I think that's a really interesting thing. What's a normal reaction? So you're sitting there and you say, listen, we've seen, and this, and I know when we spoke previously, you talk about the K2 spice, the things, the bath salts, the things that were coming to the gas stations, those things started showing up in 2008, 2009, and we've seen the crazy reaction. So you're like, it's 5 years into it. You're briefing the Attorney General of the United States. You're briefing Eric Holder, and you say, listen, we think this is a systemic and intentional attack on this country. What sort of reaction were you hoping for? And is the way he reacted to that, I guess, typical for somebody at that high level? Or have there been other instances where you've seen more immediate or actions taken with more urgency on different types of threats?
So, great question. I mean, the Department of Justice, in my experience over the years, has lacked a sense of urgency, honestly. Like, it's just the way it is. My friend just released a book, okay, Pete Forselli, the former ATF executive on Fast and Furious. And if you look at his book and you read it, it's all about how they were letting, you know, guns and weapons and grenade parts go to Mexico. And they weren't prosecuting. So that's just normal. Like, we're used to that over the years. Sadly, you know, agents are used to no prosecutions on many cases. However, in this case, it caused such a sense of urgency. That's why we started a operation called Deadly Merchant. I mean, I guess that name is pretty appropriate for what we're seeing now, okay? So the agents out there, you know, they tried their best, but we were being hit with like a tsunami of these chemicals. And because it was so new and overwhelming, everybody was very slow to react. But honestly, like the DEA, and I do say that because I lived it, they were very proactive. We did intelligence, reviews. We put out flyers to all the state and local agencies. And we're a little disappointed in the lack of Department of Justice sense of urgency. But remember, Peter, like, let's think about how the opioid crisis started and how the corporate cartels dumped 100 billion opioids over like a 9-year period into America, and the leadership wasn't being prosecuted. Yeah, Big Pharma was getting some significant fines, and I think they still get some fines here and there, but that's just the cost of doing business. We needed to prosecute and send a very important message to all these legitimate pharmaceutical companies that if you push out 100 billion opioids to this country and get everyone addicted, you got to be held accountable. That didn't happen. So my buddy was the whistleblower on 60 Minutes and the Washington Post story, the head of DEA's diversion, Joe Ranazzisi, which is an eye-opener. But again, you got to understand, there was no sense of urgency. Like, I'm sorry, Peter, but like for me, when you're in law enforcement, you want to protect Americans. That's what we do. That's what the guys are doing now. And the ladies are out there putting their life on the line. But unfortunately, we need the support with the prosecutors. And we also needed a unity of effort. I want to tell you one quick story because you asked, and it's really important. The Department of Justice had a program back in the day, Transnational Crime Program, and they were trying to identify the biggest threats to America. When we put the Chinese on the list, they said, no, there's no real impact to America. That's a fact, and that's disgusting. It was an interagency meeting where we had and put all the agencies together, intel community and all the law enforcement agencies, Treasury Department, and we saw the Chinese as a big threat. We put them on the stage. We talked about the chemicals, and they were dismissed because the Department of Justice couldn't see outside the box that, like, no, okay, it wasn't your typical cocaine or heroin or methamphetamine. It was chemicals killing our people and destroying the brains, as you say, the cognitive warfare.
And what year would that
have been? I love that term, by the way. I will always give you credit, but I'm going to use that a lot.
What year would that have been, Derek?
So that was, again, when we started doing, you can look it up, Project Synergy and Operation Logjam was like 2010, 11, 12. And then we started having these interagency meetings defining the biggest transnational crime threats to the country. And that was, you know, I got to go back into dates, but it was sometime along that time frame, we started seeing the Chinese evolving as this chemical, you know, production arm. Now, keep in mind, China was providing the cartels precursor chemicals for methamphetamine 30, 40 years. So they have relationships. And let's not forget the 2007 Zen Li seizure of $207 million in $100 bills in Mexico City. He was a Chinese chemical broker who was actually bringing in mass amounts of methamphetamine precursors. I had never seen a seizure of money like that. You go look, it's on the internet, $207 million in mostly $100 denominations. So we knew clearly that this was something we've never seen before, but we couldn't get the traction.
Yeah.
By the way, we used to have the threat mitigation teams working together, and Admiral McRaven sponsored us down in SOCOM in Tampa with all the interagency getting together to talk about the biggest threats. Of course, the Sinaloa cartel and other cartels were part of this, but the Chinese never made the list because the Department of Justice said, nope, it's not impacting America.
It's amazing because one of the conclusions I came to in Blood Money, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, is I really feel like when it comes to fentanyl and now with the other drugs coming down the line, It really seems as if the Chinese are the senior partner and the drug cartels are the junior partner. I'm not saying that drug cartels aren't guilty. They're absolutely guilty. But without the infrastructure from the precursor chemicals to the money laundering through state banks, through the pill presses, could the cartels really, you know, pull this off as effectively as they are right now without the involvement of the Chinese?
Peter, that's awesome. That's right on point. I mean, look, you know from your book, because you documented it, they sent mass amounts of Chinese nationals into Mexico to help facilitate the production methods, and the money launderers are sitting in Mexico City brokering these deals. They undercut the existing money launderers, charging 0% in many cases just to get the business so they could prove their reliability. But the reality is that, like I always have said, that the Chinese criminal networks, okay, they're using the cartels as like a proxy, just like Iran uses Hezbollah to carry out the dirty business, okay? Well, right now, like Mike McCall, the former Homeland Security chairman and also congressman from Texas. He said it one day. I was at a congressional breakfast and he said, you know, a great foreign policy for China is selling fentanyl to America. Now, when you think about that, that really sums it up. Like, they're sitting back and they're completely taking advantage. And now with these marijuana grow operations, Peter, which, again, that's where you refer to cognitive warfare. That's brilliant. I give them credit for strategically figuring out that America's weak on marijuana. America wants to legalize marijuana. America's trying now to convince the DEA administrator to reschedule marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. And at the same time, the Chinese are setting up over 1,000 grow operations to destroy the brains of our younger generation. And you talk to the emergency room doctors that see these kids with depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, psychosis. You look at CNN's health article that came out recently, how the marijuana today, which is much higher THC content, is causing increased strokes, increased heart attacks. So think about how smart that is. I do have to give them credit, but shame on America for not connecting the dots. That's what I would say. Shame on this White House, who already has a legacy of 300,000 plus dead Americans just from drugs. Let's not even talk about the migrants that are dying on the way here, and also all these human traffickers and sex traffickers that are abusing young children. So, yeah, it's pretty disgusting.
So, Derek, just to the point, you know, you have this issue of why there's no inaction. One of the points I make in the book, particularly as it relates to Joe Biden, is you have these financial connections with China that are deeply embarrassing. And in the case of the Bidens, I believe, and I think the evidence indicates, you have one degree of separation. You have, you know, White Wolf, Zhang An Liu, who was the head of the UBG gang, which basically set up the Sinaloa cartel, at least according to Mexican reports, in the fentanyl trade. His business partner gave the Bidens $5 million in an interest-free forgivable loan in 2017 that has not been paid back. It's a little surprise to me that Joe Biden doesn't want to talk about this. Eric and I were talking earlier about the situation with TikTok. You know, there's this debate about, are we going to ban or force the sale of TikTok? And now you've got people like Kellyanne Conway who are actually lobbying for this. The Chinese call this borrowing mouths to speak. Is this part of the problem?
Well, and think about this in the context of what Derek was just talking about. So they're setting up grow operations because we're weak on marijuana specifically, right? We have harder penalties. We have harder regulations about different types of drugs. Marijuana is becoming, I mean, the move there. And you've got a lot of American politicians making money off of the legalization and the normalization of marijuana access. China seems poised to take advantage of that. That's obviously going to have negative consequences on this next generation. But you have to sort of view the TikTok thing as a different form of the same effort, right?
Cognitive warfare.
And so I guess just, Derek, how aware, I mean, obviously your focus has been on the drugs and not the TikTok, but as you see reporting on what China's doing with TikTok, do you view that in line with the same effort that you've been tracking professionally for the last several decades?
100%. And I would go further to say that the first job of a leader is to eliminate confusion, not create it. Yeah. So think about it. Joe Biden tried to be like young and started doing that TikTok video a couple of weeks ago, which was really boring, by the way. That's not what people want to see, is Joe Biden on TikTok.
Like, if you're going to be on Chinese propaganda, at least be entertaining, right? That's what we always
do. Yeah, it's entertaining for sure. I agree. But think about it. So when kids out there in America see the president of the United States using TikTok, if they see it, then think of the message that it's sending, as most of our government officials want to ban TikTok because they know the Chinese are on your devices. They have all the intelligence. You know, as soon as you download TikTok, the sky's the limit, right? We all know that, right? So once you get on that, you know, that platform, you know, if they want to get intelligence, they're going to get the intelligence that they need. So, yeah, it's another part of their overall unrestricted warfare. It's a way to destroy the brains, in my opinion. These kids, instead of studying, instead of doing their homework, writing papers, going to the library or going online and researching, you know, school topics, they're on these TikTok videos all day long. And that's why, by the way, I have been trying for several years to get the White House to use the social media influences, the athletes, the celebrities out there in LA to speak out and do videos on these different platforms like Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. So the kids will see the dangers of fentanyl. But that's kind of like, it's been blown off because a lot of the professional athletes are relying on China for other things. As you know, look at the NBA and some of the controversy with Ennis Freedom and others that spoke out against China. So everybody's silent because they don't want to be speaking out against China. So what is the financial connection? Peter, as you said, you follow the money and a lot of things make sense, right?
Yeah.
So beautiful job on your book and beautiful job articulating so specifically how this really works and why they're not talking about China.
It's worth pointing out just in closing that one of the few people that Derek Maltz has been successful at getting to speak out against this issue is somebody who is a celebrity, but he doesn't have a shoe deal in China. Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil's got a thing out there with him and he's been great, but it's because he doesn't have these commercial entanglements in China, right?
Right. I mean, Dr. Phil did a video reel with me. I mean, he's got millions of followers, but unfortunately, I don't think a lot of the kids are following him.
Yeah.
We need the top athletes to get out there and do some video reels. Otherwise, the kids. Because remember, here's the bottom line. Let's keep it simple. After 9/11, we came out with this alert system. Right now, we're severe. And the Chinese are invading. As we know, there's over 18,000, you know, over the first 4 months on the southern border coming here illegally. Last year, 24,000 coming over the border illegally. Why are we letting them in? And why are we letting them buy land and farmland and invest in our country? We couldn't do that in China. And they're setting up counterintelligence operations. So all Americans are impacted by this. And I wish they'd wake up.
We do as well. And Derek, we know that you are shouting at people to wake up. You were doing that in government service. We really appreciate all the work that you've done to serve our country over the years. And the fact is, even though you are retired, you are still a voice out there. And we appreciate that very much. Thanks for making the time to come on the podcast. We are going to stay focused on this issue. We hope to have you back to talk more about it. Eric, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just think it's really interesting. I know it's gratifying for you, and I think it's eye-opening even for me after having worked on a number of books. You know, we've exposed a lot of government corruption and cronyism historically. We've exposed the way that members of Congress make money off of their positions. We've exposed the different schemes that the families of politicians have. But I think this is the first time we can directly connect money in a politician's bank account to the empty chair at the dinner table because of the loss of life that these members of the government that are making money, or at least kind of compromised in this way, that's the reason why they're failing to stand up to protect it. And I think there's a reason why we're hearing from people, members of the law enforcement community, members of the families who have lost loved ones. What we're exposing in this book, what you've done, I think hits in a different way and in a much more somber way. And that makes the issue all the more urgent, which is why we appreciate people like Derek and their reactions. And so we hope to see more of it and continue to elevate their voices on this platform.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you again, Derek, for your time. And we thank you, the audience, for taking the time to listen to this podcast. You can find more information about our research or this podcast at thedrilldown.com. And you can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are located. Until next time, thank you very much.